Yeah.
So we, what stage are we on? 15, stage 15 of the tour now. And we've got 15.7 kilometers to go. You and I are both watching it.
You've got 15.7 of you. I'm maybe 0.2 of a kilometer ahead. I'm at 15.5.
Oh, what? How does this work?
I'm using the old school live television Eurosport.
Oh, I'm on interwebs television. Interwebs. Yeah, you get adverts. I don't get adverts.
Yeah, I've been wandering around doing my chores on the farm all afternoon with my phone with the GCN app on the entire time, watching it on there.
Yeah.
But you're right. You come back to the house and you've got to suffer through the advertisements for Alpecin or whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm so glad I haven't had to do with adverts because they end up grinding on you. So, yeah, 15 odd K to go, and there is two groups on the road. That's a lie. There's several groups on the road, isn't there? And the yellow jersey is 5 minutes, over 5 minutes back, and it is literally Vingegaard, Pogacar, Carapaz.
Carapaz, yeah.
And several others in that group. And the front of the race is Sepp Kuss, which is great. Love to see that guy do well. He kind of deserved it, to be honest. He's been such a solid rider for Jumbo this month. It'd be quite cool to see him do well. But it's basically a downhill finish. So you could see someone like Nibbles appearing out of nowhere and causing a bit of trouble, I think.
So the leader, Sepp Kuss, is 400 metres from the summit. I've got 400, just gone under 400 metres.
Yeah.
And then downhill finish. Assume you get over that hill first, you win. That's a theory, but he looks pretty good. He's moving a little bit. He's wiggling a little bit, but he looks pretty good.
He's got Valverde 26 seconds behind him.
26. Valverde can go downhill. I mean, we shall see. Time will tell. I'm looking forward to watching it live with you, mate.
Yeah, and so we've got Sepp Kuss, Valverde. Then there's a group of chasers, which is Gordeaux, Wout Poels, Ruben Guerrero, Mike Woods, Alaphilippe, Ron Vigieri, Nibali, Dan Martin. There's a group of 10 chasing. And then you've got the yellow jersey group. It's not a lot of riders, to be honest. Pogacar, Aran, Vingegaard, Carapaz, Ben O'Connor, who we've seen go up the front of it, Wilco Kelderman, Lutsenko, Enric Mas, and Madara. And then Guillaume Martin's in a group which is another 2.5 minutes behind.
Yeah, they're out of it.
They're out of it. And then the green jersey group is 20 minutes back.
Okay, so that's probably going to be inside the cutoff without too much stress.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
That group is like Cavs in that, Morkoff's in it, De Klerk's in it, like loads of the Quickstep riders. It doesn't look like it's a huge group. It's saying it's a group of 9 riders, and then it's just scattered throughout the rest of the climb.
I've just had on my screen, I've just had the leaders go over the top. So they're now doing 64 kilometers an hour going down the other side. So you've got to assume Sepp Kuss is on for a little victory here. But fair play to him. Good rider. I like him.
Yeah, he's been that kind of rider that sort of, he didn't seem, I can't remember what race it was recently, but they gave him the opportunity to be a GC leader. And unfortunately, it just didn't quite work out. But as with everything that's happened with Jumbo Visma, he's had such a great opportunity. Well, the riders in the team have had such a great opportunity just to kind of go for it. And seeing Sepp Kuss win a stage, hopefully. And after Wout van Aert's win,
I've got Carapaz attacking on my screen.
Have you? I've got Aran attacking on my screen right now.
I'll just wait. Just wait a moment. You're about to Carapaz attack over the top. It's not gotten very far. We're just praising Kuss there a little bit. But I tell you what's been really weird the last few days of watching. Yeah. Ineos just not been able to put a dent in this race. It's not going to do what they usually do and impose themselves effectively. Again, today's another cracking example of it.
I just keep seeing it. Ineos team seems to have turned into Pogacar's domestic team.
It's well, yeah.
Because he's not, he's not got the team around him. Like, we know, I know we spoke previously, like, UAE have signed loads of new riders and stuff, but his team are just never there. They're never there. They're never up there in front of the race at these kind of points where you need the team around you. But then again, same argument, Ineos, there's no one there apart from Carapaz.
Yeah, I mean, but I suppose at this point, it's Ineos have done all the hard work to isolate Pogacar. They've made it difficult for his marshals, his kind of lieutenants, sorry, and they've all peeled off one by one. But the problem they're having, once they've isolated Pogacar, is they can't get the killer blow on him. Nobody can crack him.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I know you should never say that the yellow jersey competition is done, but it does feel like it's.
And I think I remember us talking the other day. It felt like it was done back then, you know, 4 or 5 days ago. I mean, I don't see how anyone's going to crack this guy.
Not the way he's riding.
And on your screen in a minute, you're about to see Ben O'Connor attack. And again, Pogacar just spins up and joins him.
Is he still nose breathing?
Is he still what?
Is he still nose breathing? Is he actually looking like he's making an effort yet?
He doesn't look like he is in the Hurt Locker. No, he looks comfortable.
Yeah, Ben O'Connor's just attacked now. And straight on his wheel, isn't he? Like it's.
Yeah. See what I mean?
Yeah.
I like watching him riding. I like watching how he's navigating this race. It's a very similar way that he rode last year, in that the only thing he did was just have to sit on Roglic's wheel the entire time and keep following that wheel.
Yeah, that's literally all he had to do, and just watch people drop off the back.
Yeah, yeah, he's an exceptional athlete, but racing his guts out at the moment, it seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, this will be. Ineos haven't won the Tour since Bernal. What was that? 2019. I mean, in between now and 2019, what have they won? They've won the Giro with Teo. That's it.
And the Giro with Bernal.
And the Giro with Bernal, yeah. Yeah, very true. I forgot about that one. But it's like, it just feels as though, like, you know, their focus always was the Tour. So it must be quite frustrating for that team right now to just realise that they're not actually dominating it anymore.
I think if I'm them, I'm asking myself, damn, how do we beat this guy?
I know how they beat him.
That's it, isn't it? Yeah. Can't beat him, join him. I mean, you wouldn't blame him if that's what they did. But if they couldn't sign him, how do they beat him? I'm not sure, because he's just showing time after time. You can isolate him as much as you want. Doesn't mean he's going to break. Doesn't mean he's going to crack.
Yeah, I mean, the only slight moment of weakness, and it was a very minor moment of weakness, was on the Von Tuesday when Vink
but
got
yeah,
it. But it wasn't really a moment of weakness.
I felt more like he sat back a little bit from that, yes, thinking, you know, Vingegaard is not a threat on the GC. We've got a pile of work done on the chaps behind us. I've got a big old gap to them. Why burn the additional match? I interpreted it.
Like he said in his post-race interview, I've shown a weakness today, but I'm now 5 minutes ahead of my next rival because Ben O'Connor blew up on that stage.
Yeah.
So it's like, how's that?
I reckon the words in his ear from the car would have been along the lines of, you could, you know, just
don't stress
here. And therefore he didn't have to follow that wheel for the last, it was only what, the last, half a kilometre of that hill anyway.
Exactly. It was nothing really, was it? But it was cool to see Vingegaard attacking. Like, it's nice to see that he's been given the opportunity to have a bit of a free rein. Obviously, it's to the misfortune of many other teammates, but still great to see a young rider riding the way he is.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a shame, I suppose, in a way that, you know, he sports that young rider jersey. It's a shame that it couldn't be his as being the best young rider, you know. It almost makes more sense for if you're in the yellow, you're excluded from the young riders category, you know, because if it gets all the way to Paris like this, he won't get the recognition of having won it all those days and been the leader of that competition.
Yeah, that's a good way of wording it. That's a really good way of thinking about that, actually, because I hadn't. It's just a competition that seems a bit of a dud competition now, in all honesty, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and no one would try and fiddle it so that they didn't get the yellow jersey, so they got the young riders. So if you're in the yellow, I think you should be excluded from the young riders category.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that. Because Vingegaard's what? Is he? He's in the top five, maybe, at the moment in the GC?
I think he's just outside of the top five. He's not far off. I think he's in that kind of like 5 to 7 minute category. But it would also help hot up that category of the other people chasing him and trying to make fight for that jersey, because they can fight for it.
Yes, exactly. I'm just trying to see if I can get
it. I might pen an email to the powers that be and make a suggestion.
Let us know if they get back to you. It'd be good to hear if they do.
Yeah. So I'll get right on it.
Vingegaard is currently...
Come on. Oh, no, he's further back. Isn't he 15 minutes back?
Is he that far back?
I think, again, is why I don't think Pogacar was worried when it appeared he was dropping in the other day. I think he's a decent chunk of time back.
He's fourth. But he's 5:32 back.
Oh, okay.
So, as of yesterday's stage, Pogacar is first. Guillaume Martin was second with 4:04. Then Uran, 5:18. Vingegaard, 5:32. Carapaz is 5:33. Benoit, 5:58. Wilco Kelderman, Alexei Lutsenko, Enric Mas, and Castaneo. Castaneo getting in the top 10 there. He's been riding well. I've never ridden in Andorra, and literally the stage has made me want to go there so badly. It looks unbelievable.
You know, I entirely agree with that statement. You can see why riders go and base themselves out there.
It's beautiful, amazing tarmac, super, looks like it's really like flowing roads. I mean, it looks like it's been bloody windy at points. Quintana's done what Quintana seems to do recently in the last 5 years, where he attacks and then just blows up.
Puts his nose in the wind and just gets absolutely owned by it.
Yeah.
It must be really demoralising being him and being his team. Because, you know, even if it seems like he's gone a day with good legs, he's either getting his timing wrong or going too early or something, but he just can't seem to deliver the goods.
Yeah, he's not.
Just to finish my point, for the high kind of high mountain, high altitude, you know, South American specialist that he is, feels a bit disappointing.
Yes, I agree. He doesn't. I'm not a big fan of Quintana. Holy moly! I've just seen on my group that the yellow jersey is caught up with Wout van Aert.
Wout van Aert dropped back from the chase group.
Ah, that makes sense.
He wasn't able to keep the pace. As soon as it went super, super steep, he wasn't able to keep the pace and he dropped himself back.
I mean, it's pretty like 85 kilos. He's a big guy.
Oh, yeah. And he's ridden an exceptional tour. You know, I was trying to explain this to somebody the other day. He really is what should be classed as an all-round rider. You know, when you go and pick your fantasy tour teams and they kind of classify them, he's the definition of all-round, if ever there was one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, second in the sprint, next day goes and win up Vontoux.
Yeah.
And then super strong in the breakaways, super strong, you know, as a...
Handy on the time trials.
Oh, yeah. Got to forget he's a damn good time trialist as well. Like, also got to remember, he had his appendix out.
This is true. So, yeah, I think he's the kind of rider that should be classed as an all-rounder. Some of the guys that are classed as all-rounders are very good going uphill and time trialing, but they can't do anything else.
Yeah, can't sprint against the cavalry, can they?
You're not going to see any other yellow jersey contenders sprinting it out with cab, are you?
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, I think that Wout van Aert. I mean, people always keep going on this Tour de France. It's all about Pogacar, but I think realistically, you have to go. Wout van Aert is probably the best all-round rider at the tour. Because of the diversity he's doing, as we said, mountain stages, time trials. Got a little bit wide there. Wow.
Shane Van Der Poel isn't there as well, because he's a similar kettle of fish, isn't he? But
yeah, very much so.
So right. Bino, please be quiet. I'm talking to us. Oh yes, I know. Pogacar's going to win. I know. She's not happy about it.
No, she's not a fan, is she, of Pogacar?
She's not a fan. She's mentioned it to me earlier on. She's like, I don't get it. Fair play to Guy, but I don't get it. And I understand things.
Yeah. So currently, I've just gone. Sepkus has just gone with 2K to go now. So
yeah.
On his he's got it in the bag. Half a minute on Valverde, he's got it in the bag.
Yeah, and you know, having lost their main guy, you know, they're not having a bad tour overall.
Yeah.
When you compare them to a lot of the other teams that kind of aren't really having much of a showing, they're having a pretty good tour overall.
Still won a few stages. You can't complain at that at the end of the day, can you?
Exactly. On telly a lot. Picked up a few stages. A big part of the conversation. You compare them to some of the other teams, which you're not really seeing and hearing that much out of. I think if I was them, despite losing my main guy, I wouldn't be disappointed with where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, you look at FDJ and they're down to the same amount of riders, I think, as Jumbo-Visma. And
yeah,
Gordo's had a bit of a shitter, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, you know what? I picked him in my team with such high hopes, and he's just not delivered. He's done the same thing to me that young French riders have done to me for the last decade of me picking them in my fantasy team. They've just failed to deliver.
Because he's looked strong in the races leading up to the tour. He really has.
Right?
Really good. And I don't know what it is. Is it the pressure of it being the Tour de France?
They're just not good enough. I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those things we just think there's so many things obviously have affected that.
Yeah, and again, it's not. We talk a lot about having the teams and strength around them, but as Pogacar is showing, you don't always need a team. You know, if you know how to ride the race, you just follow the strong guys and keep pedaling your bike. You know,
exactly.
After a while, if your lungs, your legs give out, well, it's because you ain't good enough. You don't meet the standard.
So, I mean, you must be like 100 meters ahead of me. Sepkus must have crossed the line by now for you.
Just yes,
yeah. Well for the young man.
Yeah, well played, Sebkus. I think he lives in Andorra, so I think he's one of the ones that he probably spent a bit of time figuring that climb out. And if so, it's paid off.
Yeah. Valverde's rolling in for second, which is a pretty damn good result for the old man.
Yeah, Valverde.
Not a fan.
Not a fan of the rider. Never have been. I've always found myself suspicious of him. Mm. He's firmly in that generation of riders that were very kind of in the grey area. Probably have cheated at some point. No proof against it, but that's my suspicion. Never liked him.
Yeah, but, I think he looks like a pirate.
Say again.
I just think he looks like a pirate.
I thought you said pirate. Did I just hear the word pirate? I get you.
There's that kind of pirate vibe to him. I'm not a fan. And he's just like...
Which, in normal circumstances, looking like a pirate is a positive thing. I would take that.
Yeah, but not... He's like the evil pirate, you know.
Yeah, the evil pirate.
He's got like some... He would be the real bad guy in Pirates of the Caribbean, you know.
Yeah.
Blackbeard on crack kind of bad.
Littering. Oh, I don't know if you've just seen, you've actually seen the replay of Sebkus crossing the finish line. He throws his sunglasses into the crowd. Pretty sure he's gonna get fined for that.
I've just seen the climbers sprinting. I always think climbers sprinting looks really funny.
Yeah, they're all elbows, aren't they?
Not natural sprinters at all.
No. Oh, yeah.
There go the sunglasses.
You see it?
Yeah.
I don't think the finish line is a designated area that you can leave kit in, is it?
He's going to get fined for that, probably.
Yeah,
I noticed probably. That Quintana only had one number on. Huh. Probably get a fine for that.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll. I mean, the bit I'm intrigued about is what's going to happen with that Pogacar group now. And to be honest, I think nothing. I think absolutely nothing.
I think just because anything that does happen, I think Pogacar's just got on lockdown, you know?
Yeah, he's just going to mark him out of it. I just think he is the strongest rider. Like, there's no two ways about it. He's the strongest rider at the Tour. And
yeah,
it's kind of scary how much stronger he is than the rest of the guys. Because, like, you look at the race and we're talking about the best cyclists in the world, and then you've got the top
with the best tactics. You know, Ineos is trying to break him down. They are the proven tacticians here.
Yeah.
And their team isn't that hindered. You know, sure, Geraint isn't competing for yellow, but you know, you're looking today. Geraint was moving well and riding well. They were able to deploy a strong force against Pogacar, and still they can't shake him.
Yeah. He's got the measure of the team. He's literally got.
Yeah, I think again, if I was them, how would I be looking to crack him? You need a big, big high mountain. Put him under pressure the whole time. Get him isolated, and then you've got to have a rider that can go toe to toe with him and beat him. And I don't think that rider exists right now. The only person that might have been able to do that was Roglic, and Roglic ain't here.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Carapaz is the rider. I don't think Thomas is the rider to do it. I don't think any of the other Ineos guys are the guys to do it.
No, I suppose it's a bit unfair on Thomas because we don't know his form because that early crash, but you've got to suspect. I mean, I don't think I've seen Thomas ride in that way, and I wouldn't expect him to take on Pogacar the way he's riding.
Pogacar rides much more aggressively, I think, than Thomas ever did.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, here come. I've got the yellow jersey group coming on in as you expected, in a pretty standard little group with Wout van Aert on the front.
Yeah, that's exactly what I could see, and there's nothing else to report. Like, it's he obviously Pogacar is going to sprint to the line, try and get ahead of anyone.
Yeah. And then Vingegaard quite rightly celebrating across the line there on my screen. The team has had a good day. They've got him in white. Van Aert is up there again and showing that he's a strong rider. He's going to be competitive throughout, and they've won the stage. So what more do you want?
Yeah. They can't complain really too much of the team. Yeah. Nice.
I'm gonna mute the telly now so I can hear you a little bit better. Oh, there we go.
Yeah,
a bit more peaceful.
I mean, we've basically seen the majority of the race. The only thing that's left that's going to occur is the battle for the green jersey to get in through the time cut. That's the only thing left that's really going to happen, I think.
That doesn't usually make for fun, entertaining watching, does it? Let's be honest.
No, it's quite. I actually find it quite alarming to watch because it is, you know, it's quite scary to see. Like, you can tell those guys are absolutely drilling it still. And
yeah,
let me see if I can get a little update on how far back they are. It looks like the live tracking app thing's gone into some annoying sort of not showing you the actual stage anymore, which is a bit annoying. But well, Paul.
So after the last episode, you sent me some homework during the last episode to come up with which of the World Tour team jerseys did I dislike the most.
I did indeed.
So I did my homework, and I think I've kind of excluded a couple of the obvious ones that are the Pro Conti teams that have been invited up a tier. Okay. Because I don't think it's fair to isolate B&B Hotels, KTM, or Intermarche Wanty-Gobert. Because they are some of the ugliest jerseys you'll ever see. But also, you know, they are significantly lower tier with not the same weight of expectation of turning out an aesthetically good and pleasing jersey. They've got a lot of mid-tier sponsors that need to find some space somewhere for some reason.
Now, B&B run quite well, considering, I think. Intermarché Gobert is awful.
Isn't it?
And they are a world tour team. Don't forget now. They are a world tour team. They took CCC's license.
They did take CCC's license. You're right. Now you're right. You're right. But maybe a bit, it felt almost too easy for me to point at those two. If that makes sense. I wanted to kind of make my challenge a bit harder. The one I kept looking at and kept finding so disappointing. You might find this strange, but Team Bike Exchange.
Yeah, it's boring.
I just don't get it.
It's really boring.
Isn't it? Isn't it so boring? And I'm not sure what those kind of like aqua colours they are that they use on the sleeves. But it just, when you look at that whole thing from a distance, it makes it feel kind of, now it could be worse, but I mean, houses, that's got to, if I had a category saying most disappointing jersey, they would get that.
So the aqua colour is that kind of colour is just purely taken because of the Bianchi bikes. That's it.
Gotcha. Of course it is. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It ties well when you see it on the bikes and everything, but it's so boring. It's just like there's no real imagination that's gone into that one. I look at it and I'm completely neutral about it. It's nothing to me. It's nothing of interest.
I tell you one that I can't help but put right up there as a potential winner of the category, fugliest jersey.
Go on.
Team Quebecca.
It's chabby.
There's so much going on.
Yeah.
I've got these blocks. I've got two different shoulder panels. I've got these strange arms leaning across the belly, looking like they're going to rip me open. So something from Alien. And when you see it on a rider, it just makes me feel uncomfortable.
So they obviously, the name change and everything was to Quebecca Next Hatch for the Tour de France.
Mm.
Next Hatch in its own right is a company that seems suspect from some of the things I've read in its existence in many other
things.
And then they've got Burberry involved as well. That's what all the patterns are to do with, is an involvement of Burberry. But I've got to be honest, yeah, that face says it all. I think it looks chabby. I know it's such a way of wording it. I just think it looks chabby and a bit. I thought the actual, when it was Quebec at Assos, it was quite nice. It's quite clean.
Yeah.
But this Quebec Next Hatch thing, I think it just looks, you know, I love what Quebec is doing as a charity. It's an incredible charity. But bringing Burberry on board just doesn't seem to tie into it.
It hasn't helped from an aesthetic point of view. I'll tell you that for nothing. My, if I had a category for most improved,
go on.
Without a shadow of a doubt, AG2R.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah?
Beautiful.
Very
well designed.
From where they used to be, from where their brown and baby blue over the years, that has been worse and worse and worse, the AG2R jersey now looks smart.
It's aesthetically very pleasing. A lot of people look at it and go, the name's confusing because the name is AG2R Citroën, but if you read the jersey, it's AG2R La Citroën Mondial. But
yeah.
That, I don't see that as an issue. I think it's incredibly clean. I love that they've stuck with the brown bibs. I think it's great. It stands out in the race. That's why it's good.
That's what it does well. It does what the jersey's supposed to do. It catches your attention.
Yeah.
Tell you one that feels very busy and easily lost.
Mm-hmm.
Team DSM.
It looks like an old Team Sky kit.
It looks like an old Team Sky kit. It looks like something, the designs that you've seen in some of the women's peloton over the last couple of years, the kind of colours they've used. Mm-hmm. And the shapes they've used. But yeah, it just feels like a bit of a, I don't know. I feel like no real thought went into it.
I agree. I do agree. I really do agree.
Do you?
I'm
glad you agree with that.
It's a bit nothing. There's so much more they could have done with it. the whole talk of the blue stripes is basically very similar. If you read when they launched it, the talk of the blue stripes is basically the same kind of way that Team Sky talked about the thin blue line. And it's just like, oh, you've just gone, oh, the Team Sky thing was quite successful for them. Let's just copy and paste that and just change the logos, you know?
Yeah. I think special notes should go to Total Energy
for being disgusting.
For being wiggly wiggly gross. It's something that Total as a business have always had, these really weird gross logos. Energy companies seem to do a really good job at churning out really butt ugly logos, and that's really come through on this race kit. You know, litter it with a whole bunch of other names on there as well, and it feels very Euro club jersey.
Yes, I agree. I don't like this color grading, like rainbow thing on it. I don't understand how that ties into the business or anything, because Total Energy, as they're now branded as, their logo. Admittedly, the logo does have all the colors in, because the new current logo, which is on the chest, is the red and the orange, and then the E has basically the rest of the rainbow colors in. But it just doesn't really work on the jersey with the white. If the whole jersey, for example, was that fade, that'd be pretty badass. But what also what makes it worse, in my opinion, is the bib shorts that go with it. Like, it just looks tacky, you know.
Yeah, it does. We've always said this throughout the years. Cofidis just always looks so budget, but it's the same level of budget that it's always looked. I don't really remember it being much different to what it is now, and therefore my expectations of it are so low that it hasn't really changed my feelings in it anyway.
The only thing Confidence has done well is they've improved their red. It's a better red, and they actually made a point of talking about the fact that they've changed the red slightly. Basically, it looks
good on them.
Even more post box red. That's it.
The kit
hasn't changed in about 5 years for Confidence, I think.
No, I think you're right. And it's always disappointing. So I think in conclusion, like I said, you know, AG2R get my most improved award. And for one that I dislike personally, it's a pretty even toss up between Bike Exchange and Quebecca, to be honest with you. And Quebecca probably nudge it because of just how busy it is.
Yeah, interesting. Now, what do you think of... So I was thinking about this as well. And I've got all the jerseys in front of me. And the other, I think up there for me is the shittest ones is UAE. It's covered in sponsors. And they also, in my opinion, do the worst national champs jerseys. Because what they've done with national champs jerseys is basically where it says UAE Emirates on it. And you've got that, the like Emirati flag. They basically just changed that as the national champs bands.
Yeah, it feels very Formula One team to me when I look at it.
Yes,
there's something familiar about it. That means I don't hate it. I'm not drawn to it, but I don't kind of hate it in the same way that, like I said, when I look at the Quebecca and I kind of feel a little bit uncomfortable inside. But I can understand why you wouldn't like it. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, and then I look at, you know, Jumbo Visma's jersey. I like the idea of it, but it doesn't stand out in the peloton. It just looks quite washed out. When they were the proper yellow, when it was completely yellow, it really stood out in the peloton. And I like that. I like what they did was they, in the gray is low, like everyone's name. So you could like put your name in the hat to have your name on the jersey. And I like that as a story and an idea, but it just doesn't stand out. Ineos doesn't stand out for me. Boring. Israel Startup Nation, the kit this year, I think looks very slick, very smart. It's definitely an improvement from previous years where I quite like the fact it's the navy blue and the white across the shoulders. I quite like that. Previous years, more of a sky blue. Trek Segafredo, love it. It's classic, simple, not messed around with it. I like that. I'm down with that. Quick Step. It's better than last year.
It's better than last year.
Yeah,
it's very Quick Step, isn't it? It's been a similar kind of pattern, similar kind of setup for a number of years. There is a lot going on, but it's not nearly as bad as some of the other bits, I don't think.
Yeah, Movistar, no, nothing really to comment on it. It hasn't changed really. The only thing they've done is changed kit sponsors, you know.
Yeah.
Bora's kit, they changed their kit specifically for the tour. I quite like it. I just don't think it stands out very well in the peloton as well. I quite liked it last year when it was the more white kit. Groupama FDJ have the award for the best national champs jerseys because they go full guns blazing with it. It is.
Yeah, legit.
If your national flag is a stripe, your full jersey is a stripe, and they don't put any of the stripes on it. That, to me, is how you do a national champs jersey.
Yeah, I do like that. I do like that.
Alpecin Fenix, I just think it looks like Ineos kit, really, to be perfectly honest.
It does, yeah. They've very much followed that mould, haven't they?
Yeah. EF.
I kind of expected a bit more from EF. I kind of want them to be doing something better. They're the team that looks like they've got their thinking in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
I wanted a bit more from this year's jersey, if that made sense. Yeah.
Hero was good.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Yeah. But they're my underperformers of the tour so far, I would say, at the moment, in terms of they're not really offering me much in the way of entertainment. Yeah. They're lacking in results. They did get a couple of guys in the break today, so fair play from that. But again, you know, they've not been able to deliver there. And there's something about Rigoberto Urán, I just don't really see him as a threat to actually winning the race. It's almost like he set himself out to be third.
Yeah.
He's racing like he's comfortable being third. If that's what it is, then fine. But I mean, doesn't make for entertaining racing for me. So.
Yeah. And then I'm just sort of running through the team kits anyway. We talked about Azure 2. Arkea Samsig. It's pretty boring. But
it's pretty boring.
It's not ugly. It's just boring. It's just a black to red fade. Lotto Soudal hasn't really changed in a very long time. Don't really have any particular stance on it, to be honest with you. Bahrain Victorious, don't like it. Didn't like it. I haven't liked it for several years, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Same thing, covered in logos. You know, they've got this blue band on the arms, which is to do with the watch sponsor on board of it. And I just think, like, having a watch sponsor for a team sounds pretentious as fuck anyway. Astana Premier Tech, it's basically the same as Arkea Samsig, but blue, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I want to hate it more, but when I look at it, I don't find it completely offensive, you know?
I agree. And then, you know, Intermarché Wanty-Groubert, we've kind of talked about that, where it is literally a billboard. B&B, I get that chavvy vibe from it as well, but it's not as bad as
Intermarché. I've been avoiding Intermarché because I think that's the obvious one of just gross. But it's strange, isn't it? I don't know what do I expect out of teams in the World Tour these days. I expect them to be noticeable and to look good because that's what bike culture is and always has been. You style yourself in a certain way. You put a little bit of thought into how you look, what you choose to wear. I want that to be reflected a bit more in some of these jerseys, which just seem a bit chaotic.
Yeah, I agree.
It's got to be said, you know, personal taste comes into this a lot. You know, some people might look at those and just really, really dig it. But I suppose those are our opinions as two people who have a lot of jerseys, make a lot of jerseys, sell a lot of jerseys. And
It's fascinating, isn't it? And like, you look at the other thing is you look at the leaders' jerseys, and I always think the green jersey looks fantastic. I always do because it's so bold. Like, there's no other jersey like it in the peloton. The green isn't really a color that you ever see in the peloton, so it stands out.
And
same with like the Giro leaders' jersey. You don't really see that pink in the peloton, especially how EF don't race that race in a pink jersey, but pink really stands out. The yellow at the tour, I mean, you still get a bit of yellow in Jumbo-Visma. You still get a bit of yellow with the combativity, the team leaders' helmets and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like, Yeah, it doesn't stand out so much to me. But, you know, speaking of the green jersey, holy shit.
Yeah, pause 1 second. I've got a window open, which is just whistling away and making it cold. I'm just going to close it, and then I want to hear your thoughts on the green jersey.
We can do that.
You can start telling me, because I can hear you.
Oh, you can hear me? Oh, so yeah. With the green jersey, yeah. For me, it's always been... It feels currently there is not... I mean, you haven't got the strongest sprinters there, yeah? It's very, very clear. There's not the strongest sprinters in the Tour de France now. But what we do have is the resurgence of probably one of the best sprinters of the last 20-odd years, to be perfectly honest, who...
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people wrote Cav off, but you have to also think about it in the guy is naturally very gifted as a bike rider, naturally incredibly excellent, talented bike rider. You know, if you look at him in his physique, he is designed to be a sprinter. His physique is sprinter, tiny arms, short legs. He's a tiny man. He's incredibly short.
Yeah, he's very tiny.
And the thing that's most fundamental about it, of how he's doing so well, is one, experience, and two, confidence. That's it.
Yeah. I think the team have done so well and got him at a really confident place, and you can see that in his riding. And that's what I think the other teams lacked with him in his last few years, aside from his up and down health issues. But whenever he had been fit, he just looked a shell of his former confident self.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, I mean, we've both been in little bunch kicks before. They do get hairy. You know, you do get hairy. You got people coming out all over the shop. People are, you know, it seems like no bike rider is really that good at holding a line anywhere ever, if we're all honest, when it comes down to a sprint for the line. So you can quite easily think about, oh, there's a barrier there, or there's a ditch there, or there's a post there I'm going to hit in a minute. So it's got to be a big confidence game to do well in that. You've got to just not be able to see any of that stuff and just focus in on what you're trying to do.
Massively so, massively so. And, you know, we look at the last stage that he won, which took him to equal Eddie Merckx's record, stage 13. That was carnage towards the end. Kinks and turns. And I don't know if you saw Cav's post-race interview. He was fucked.
Yeah, I know. I did see. Yeah.
I've never seen him like that in a post-race interview before. But
yeah,
you know, there's all this chat about him going, don't talk to me about the record. Don't talk to me about the record. You know, he was after that record.
He, oh, well, 100%. I mean, if you, it's a bit of motivation. How could you not be seeking to be, you know, the. I mean, if he breaks the record, he'll hold the most number of stages won in the Tour de France ever from an athlete.
Yeah.
Now, sure, he's taking that record off a slightly different style of bike rider, a much more of an all-rounder, as we were discussing earlier on when talking about Wout van Aert.
Yeah.
But to win that number of stages in the modern era of cycling is just mad. So that's got to be his biggest driving factor. That leaves his name indelibly on the sport alongside those guys.
Forever.
For as long as they'll be pro cycling.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he cemented himself as a... I mean, he already was a legend, but it was always like, he's so close to the record. It was always like, he's so close. He's like, he's, you know, second. He was always the bridesmaid. And then to get to the record and equal it, and especially to equal it in the state, the way that he did on that stage. It was a long stage. It was 220 kilometers. You know,
Big stage.
And it was undulating. It wasn't a particularly flat stage.
Do you reckon now that he's, you know, he's equaled the record, he's got two more shots or one more? He's got Paris and I think one other
potential. Yeah,
Do you think he sat there just telling himself it's coming home? It's coming home.
I think he is. I think he's I, if I'm honest, I could see at the end of this Tour de France, he just goes, fuck it, I'm retiring.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be a spectacular way to go out, wouldn't it? Break the record, come back, absolutely dominate it. You're right in saying that there aren't the best sprinters there, but a lot of the best sprinters started.
They did, exactly.
A lot of the best sprinters, and as you know, he's shown throughout the years that it's a battle of attrition. You've got to get yourself to these mid-race sprints to be able to compete for them. And that's just as, you know, that's the thing that he always struggled with, wasn't it, over the years, is, you know, can he get his ass up over those mountains in good time, avoid the broom wagon? That's what makes him a great. They refer to the Champs-Élysées as the sprinters' world championships, don't they? Mm-hmm. You're right, we won't see a lot of the top sprinters there, but that's because they couldn't cut the mustard on the run in.
Yeah, and whether that is from unfortunate crashes like Caleb Ewan, and as we later saw Sagan, you know, kind of accepting that the issue he got from that crash with Caleb Ewan has had to make him pull out the race, or whether that is, they just literally haven't made the time cut, as we've seen from Arnaud Démare, didn't make the time cut. The fact that, you know, we're 15 stages in, we've got another 6 stages left, yeah? And the fact that Cav has got this far, like this time last year, no one would have even thought it was possible.
You this time last year, your money would have been against him even getting this far, let alone getting this far and picking up 4 stages. You'd be betting he didn't get through week one.
And when we first talking, you were, you know, I was saying my heart says he's gonna win stages, my head says there's the potential that he can't, and we were in the same mindset. The thing is, I think he's proven I have a bias, which I always do say, you know, Manx family. And
yeah,
that's where my bias comes from. And I'm also a huge fan of him, always have been. And he's been quite, you know, it was a big reason why I started riding, because it was like, from the Isle of Man. And it was like, as we were growing up, it was watching this speedy little pocket rocket just dominating in sprints, you know.
You'd be hard pushed to find a bike rider in the UK that hasn't seen Cav or knows of Cav, knows the results, and that hasn't been a motivating factor for them to ride a road bike in the way that people ride road bikes. He'd been an inspiration to so many people. He was one of those early names of people doing well in this sport.
Yes.
You know, with the earliest name really being Chris Hoy, you know, the first like popular common name.
Yeah.
Straight after that is Cav and Brad.
Yeah.
As a pair, almost. And he's still enduring now. He's still cracking on now. So it's fantastic that the screen is just showing a picture of him slowly ambling his way up the side of a mountain, and he's got 3 teammates around him. One of them's pouring water over his back, because that's what makes the difference here and why a lot of these other sprinters can't get to the line. Quick Step's commitment to getting him to the sprint, and because sprinting is a team game, and it's not just that last 400 yards run into the line. They're helping him 30 k's out from a day stage just to get him there.
It's really beautiful to see, isn't it? The team are really behind him.
It's made even more touching given his whole story. But that's what good bike racing, bike riding is. It's that ability to apply a whole team to one outcome. Only he's wearing green. None of them have a fleck of green on them. None of them get to benefit from a fancy green helmet or a green bit of bar tape or whatever. But all the glory goes to him, but all the hard work is done by the team.
I mean, we look at Morkov. I don't know if you saw Morkov's interview after stage 13. He was like, because Morkov came second, first of all. That just shows how good a rider Morkov is, first of all. And he's basically sacrificed his options as a sprinter to go, I'll be the best lead out man in the world. I will be the best.
And
his interview about Cav after stage 13 was like, he basically said, as a fan of cycling, to have some involvement in this is a dream.
That's brilliant. I didn't hear that, but that is amazing. Having just said what I said about, you know, being able to deploy a team and that's how you get the success and glory,
Yeah.
The next thing on the screen is Pogacar, who does not need no team. He's the exact antithesis of that. He's the guy who I can't remember seeing his UAE Emirates teams doing that much for him that you know, someone like Ineos weren't already doing. He's proved that there are other ways to do it. You know, he's following the Sagan model, I suppose.
Yeah, there is that Sagan attitude where you just sort of freestyle it, don't you?
But I don't think you'll get the longevity of results that Cavendish has got without having super strong, committed teams around you.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I mean, you know, if you see Pogacar go to Ineos, or actually, or to be fair, or one of the other well-organized teams, Quick Step or whatever, they'd be damn hard to beat.
Yeah.
He's hard to beat right now. You give him a structured team around him that can sit at the pace he needs him to sit at, he could dominate this sport for the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, completely. And
going to any tour is a favorite.
Yeah, it's funny how we were talking about Egan Bernal a few years ago as being the one that everyone was going to follow and be the best, but you know, unfortunately, because of his back issues, he slumped down that. I mean, maybe he's come up a bit since winning the Giro, and he raced fantastically at the Giro. You know,
he did
Giro, and it was great to watch. And it was really lovely to see him racing strong again, actually. But is he the same caliber as Pogacar?
Yeah, if Pogacar had been at that Giro, who's going to be the one walking away in the pink, you know?
You can see that Pogacar's mind is going to be otherwise going for the record of Tour de France wins.
Yeah.
Or he is going to do and try and cement winning every single Grand Tour, like Giro, Vuelta, Tour de France, to tick them all off, because there's only, I think, four riders that have done that.
Yeah.
Maybe five.
What's more important to your career? What's that enduring history? And what's going to pay out the biggest? I would suggest focusing on the tour.
It's what Froome did.
Yeah, right. That's what Froome did. Yeah, that's what Lance did. You know, I would suggest that your cycling diehards watch the Giro.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them also watch the Vuelta. Everybody pays attention to the Tour de France in some way or matter. It's the only one that breaks its way into popular culture.
Yep.
And so yeah, I mean, if I was him, I'd be looking to align myself now to give me a really long, solid contract with a team that can deliver, that can continue to look after me when the Tour de France gets tough. Because there will be points for him where he's gone down and he's looking after, or he's got a mechanical and he needs someone to drop back for him, you know. And if he was this is what Ineos are playing for right now, I'm assuming, keep him isolated. So then if he is having a bad moment, he's having a wobble, he's missed a feed, or he's not quite feeling tip top, there's nobody to come back and pull him in, you know, tow him back into the group.
He's got to do it himself and use his own energy.
He's got to do it himself. So, I mean, that's what I suppose they're hoping now. That's the thing. If we isolate him on every hill, luck's going to have to turn against him at some point.
Yeah, in theory, you're completely right.
That's the only thing Ineos can be thinking, right?
Yeah,
and they just got to hope that works. And if that doesn't work, that doesn't work. But if I was him as a rider, I'd be looking around. You know, I'm at UAE Emirates. They've got a load of guys in, and yet hill after hill after hill, I'm sat here doing all the, like, looking after myself.
So Cav has made it back in the time cut.
Yeah, just in that on the spring. That's good.
Yeah,
lovely, jubbly, lovely, jubbly.
Good job. Job well done there for Cav. Three riders around him. He must be pretty chuffed with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's still 8.5 minutes, nearly nine minutes left before the time cut as well. It's perfect.
Brilliant. When we look forward from this, you know, obviously rest day Monday coming up, what's next on the agenda?
So next up, we've got stage 16, which is a hilly stage. Oh, you've vanished. You're back. That was weird.
I pushed the screen to check the time, and it just kind of like went off and then on again.
So we've got Stage 16 is hilly. It's basically got category 2, category 1, category 2, category 4. But it doesn't look too bad. Could be a sprint finish or one for a breakaway, I would say. I'm probably going more breakaway.
Sounds like a breakaway to me, yeah.
17 is mountaintop finish. Two category 1s and an HC category climb. So that's going to be a battle for the GC. Finish at the top of a mountain. 18.
Got ya.
18 is very similar to 17. But you've got two HC category climbs in it. 130 kilometers. Stage 17, just going back to that one, is 178 kilometers. It's a big day out on the bike, that one.
Yeah.
And then sprinter day, 100%. Stage 19, 207 kilometers, though. So it's a big one. But it almost looks like it's slightly flat downhill the whole way, to be perfectly honest with you.
Okay, nice.
Definitely a flat stage. There's a sprinter's points quite early on in the stage as well, by the looks of it. So Cav could break the record on the 7th. Not the 7th, the 16th, sorry. For stage 19. Stage 20 is the individual time trial. It's a 30.8 kilometer time trial, flat time trial as well.
I'm looking forward to that.
So, I mean, you look at that and Wout has got to be fancying that one.
Yeah, I mean,
or Stefan,
you're probably going to see. Yeah, you're probably going to see another fantastic ride from Pogacar, I imagine. Yeah. And then, yeah, around that, you've got to be looking at Wout. You've got to be looking at, Kung, yeah. Thomas, you know, he's starting to look a bit better and moving a bit better now. You know, a fair number of days away from this crash, if he's got some legs in him, that could be his chance to go and deliver a stage for the team, which, let's not forget, they are stageless at the moment.
Very true.
Yeah, interesting.
So I reckon we've got two more sprinter stages.
Mm.
And then I reckon, you know, we're looking at 16 is probably a breakaway day, which is our next stage after the rest day.
Yeah. So two kind of classic high mountain stages then with what look like summit finishes. So those are the 2 days where, again, if someone's going to make a change in this race, they need to get Pogacar isolated for as many kilometers as they can in those 2 days.
Exactly. And they are subsequent stages. It's 17 and 18. That's basically the options of trying to take time on him, because he's not going to lose time. He's not going to lose time to Carapaz in a time trial. Let's be honest.
No way.
He's, I mean,
if anything, he'll probably gain a chunk of time.
Exactly. And I mean, Vingegaard has time trialed very well.
Yes, that's true.
So they could be on kind of a level pegging. He's not going to lose time to Rigoberto Urán. I know he's won a time trial recently, but it was also a time trial up a mountain. This is a pan flat time trial. It's a powerhouse time trial.
Yeah.
I can't see Gatka losing time there.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because you've got to ask what have Ineos got left to race for? Because, you know, 5.5 minutes back to their rider, it seems like an almost unbridgeable gap. You'd have to really put Pogacar in the hurt locker. You know, on those 2 days, they need to isolate him early and just keep cranking up the pressure and hope that somewhere they can break him. But for every meter they can't break him, they're carrying him closer and closer to winning the race.
This is exactly the thing.
And if they want to deliver a stage win, are they better off, you know, saving Thomas's legs for the time trial? Because as well, let's not forget, for Carapaz to win, there are still two other riders ahead of him. So for all the work they do, you don't want to inadvertently hand Urán a victory if you can crack Pogacar. Mm-hmm. It's a real challenge. I'm looking forward to those 2 days. I'll watch them very closely.
Mm. I mean, so Urán is 5:18 back. Vingegaard is 5:32 and Carapaz is 5:33. So there's definitely, Carapaz could get on the podium.
Yeah. But again, wherever you've seen Carapaz and Pogacar, Urán and Vingegaard have not been far behind. They've been right there. You know, so it's, you know, for for Carapaz to get on the podium, he's got to crack one of those three, two of those three, you know? Cool, it's a big ask.
I like Carapaz. I like him as a rider. I like watching him race because I think he's a bit of a swashbuckler. I think he properly races. But I just don't think he's... I mean it in the nicest sense of the way of wording it. I don't think he's good enough.
I don't think he's good enough to win this race.
No.
Is he good enough to repeat his previous win, like going and doing like a Vuelta or a Giro? Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. But you don't get the best GC riders there. You don't get the absolute top of the top with their best team there. He's definitely capable of winning those again because you can see he's not, you know, he's with Pogacar for a lot of this. Mm. But he wasn't with Pogacar when Pogacar was chasing down Vingegaard up the side of On 2. So, you know, there was daylight, a big bit of daylight there.
Mm.
And that's with a fantastic team around him. So, yeah, he's not that same kettle of fish as this young lad.
And it's the same thing. He cannot time trial. He's not compared to Pogacar, not compared to Vingegaard, not compared to Geraint Thomas. You know,
yeah.
Geraint, you know, but remember Geraint Thomas is a national champ in the TT as well, has previously.
Yeah.
And you look at the top, I'm just looking at the top 10 in the GC. We know Pogacar can time trial. As I said, Iran, he's won an uphill time trial. So he'll do an okay time. He's not going to be incredible. Vingegaard will win a time trial. Carapaz, not a natural time trialist. Ben O'Connor, okay at time trials. Wilco Kelderman, he's all right at time trials.
Yeah, he is.
Senko time trials as well, you know.
The question I'm asking myself here is, if Ineos didn't take up the challenge and the chase, they've drawn quite a lot of flack and criticism in the last few days for kind of chasing and just looking like they're turning Pogacar. But if they're not doing that, who else is going to put him under pressure?
Exactly. There's no other team.
Who else is there that can really put him under any kind of pressure? And so let's imagine a summit stage where Ineos say, no, we're not playing today. We're just gonna chill out back here. We're saving our energy for the time trial. Nobody else will be able to put the hurt on Pogacar enough. That means he can't then just skip off and win the stage or take even more time. Ineos have to do all the chasing.
It's on them, isn't it?
They have to do all the work. Probably this year to no benefit.
Yeah. That must suck, Dave Brailsford.
Imagine that. I'm trying to picture it inside the team bus now. I'm trying to picture Dave. How is he? He's going to be fully aware of this fact.
Yeah.
How is he dealing with that? How is he motivating the riders? How is he? What is he planning to make sure they walk away with something from all of those efforts? Because he's got to want something out of it. Or is this, you know, a continuation of his ethos he pledged to us a year ago, where, you know, they're just going to keep racing their bikes. They're just going to race hard, and try wherever possible. Because if that is the case, they're the only ones doing it. You don't see many other teams coming up the front with three or four guys and really putting Pogacar under pressure.
Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting. It's nice to see it not all going Ineos' way, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. It feels very familiar with Ineos, though. It feels like, you know, they quite regularly have a pile of crashes early on and they're kind of like, making, like, trying to force stuff and make stuff work, doing a lot of the work on the front. It's just that we're used to seeing them by now having, if not in yellow, just about to take yellow. My conclusion, they'd be daft not to sign Pogacar.
Yeah. It's the team with the biggest budget. That's the thing. They've got the budget.
If you're Dave and you're sat there going, right, we can't beat this guy on the road. No matter what we do, we've got to keep working because nobody else can do it.
Yeah.
So we have to expend all our energy to try and crack him because nobody else will. And if we can't crack him, we might as well hire him. Because you don't want to be doing this again next year if you're Ineos.
Yeah. It's just going to start looking bad on the team.
If they want to maintain this, the the top of the sport, yeah, they're going to have to open the checkbook and sign him up. I think Pogacar signed like a 3-year deal quite recently with UAE, like end of last year. But I'm assuming Ineos can find the cash, can't they?
They can find the cash and they'd buy him out of the contract. That's all they did.
Yeah.
We've seen it happen in World Tour, you know, with other riders where, you know, they just get bought out of their contracts because of the demand.
Yeah.
Mark Hirschi is another example. That was all weird.
I mean, yeah, it was. It was. And don't get me wrong, UAE Emirates are not going to be short of a penny or two, you know? They get a big boy budget. But when someone like Ineos comes knocking, riders, you see this a lot in football, riders' heads going to get turned at the opportunity as well, you know, combined with that being probably the better budget. I think it'd be hard, if you were Pogacar, it'd be hard not to say no. Going back to what we said earlier on, he's looking around now going, where's all teammates?
Yeah. It's very true. It is. It's going to be interesting what happens because we know that a lot of these deals go on around the Tour de France. They don't obviously get... They don't always... Well, sometimes they do get leaked, but they don't. It doesn't always come out around the Tour de France. But these deals happen around the Tour. And
oh, yeah. I mean, rest days at the Tour, notorious for doing all this kind of work. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what comes out. I mean, it seems like Sagan going to Total Energies is pretty much a done deal from what we're hearing. And specializing in that team as well.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. Again, they're obviously a team that are increasing their budget, increasing their desire to get exposure in the sport. Fair play to them. Come on in, bring some money, spend some pennies.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can get Sagan into a place where he can continue to be competitive. I don't think we'll see a lot of that team because I don't think Sagan will be hyper competitive in the coming years, and I don't think they can spend the same amount of money on any kind of a GC leader and team. So it's probably a shot to nothing for them.
We see it as how they signed, you know, Nicky Terpstra when he was out of contract at Quickstep, and that was the year that Terpstra won Flanders, I think. And then after that went to, it was weird. It was a weird, that was another weird move. Took a step down to a lower division team. I mean, admittedly, since Nicky Terpstra's been there, he's been just like rolled from a spout of crashes and bad luck. But
yeah,
they obviously signed him knowing, oh, look, we've got a former Tour of Flanders winner here. You know, we've got a great rider in the team. He's done jack shit at the team.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dangerous, that, isn't it?
A good decision, effectively.
Yeah, I mean, signing riders with potential. I like, you know, it's Mark Hirschi going to UAE. You know, they'd have taken one look at him and how he rode last year's tour and gone, whoa. You know, he was like almost MVP of tour last year, the way that he rode and the way that his team enabled him to ride. Yeah. And as we said at the start of this, it's kind of a shame he's there because he's now going to be used to help Pogacar as opposed to seeing him do what he does best, which is long-range missile, get up in the break and destroy the break. I kind of hope he goes somewhere else so we can see him do what he does best.
Yeah, I agree. So something else I'm going to bring up again, it is going back to Mark, obviously, but the sprinters, the top five in the sprinters, as we've sort of said, maybe there's not the best sprinters at the tour now. Unfortunately, some have crashed out or not made the time cut. If you look at the top five on the points, Cav is on 279, Michael Matthews is second on 207. Third is Jesper Philipsen on 174. Fourth, Dominic Cabré on 159. And fifth is Alaphilippe on 130. Then just looking who else is in this sort of a sprinter. Volkov is on eighth, which is great, on 95.
I'll tell you, this is something you don't get on the GCN app. Sorry to interrupt you. I just had to turn the telly off because immediately after the tour is concluded, they're showing horrific gymnastic crashes, like girls on the bars swinging and falling and hurting themselves. I just looked up and I was like, oh, find the remote, turn the telly off.
GCN app.
Please continue.
So you know, and then you look at the rest of the top 10, you've got Balcomolima is 10th, Mohoric is, Morkov is 8th, Wout van Aert is 7th, 6th is Pogacar, like, in the sprint. Yeah. So I'm looking at this, Cavers on 279 points. Next is Michael Matthews on 207. Do you think it's coming home for Cav?
I feel like it is. I think he's got the momentum behind him. He's got the team behind him. The confidence, as we said, is through the roof. How can it not be?
Second green jersey, that'll be in his career, I think.
Third?
It's not one. He's definitely one.
I'm going to ask for... I need a quick...
Yeah,
I'll be back in 1 second. Give me 1 second. My apologies. I was doing all kinds of funny jiggles there. The question I had for you when I was watching yesterday's racing. Balcomolima.
Yeah.
Going away and soloing the win. Terrific ride. Great ride. He's one of those riders that, for me, I've put him in my fantasy team for a few years. You know, he normally has a really strong run into the tour and then never quite delivers. I didn't include him last year because of his history of letting me down. But, you know, in terms of letting down, how do you feel about Team Trek Segafredo as a team and what they bring to the tour? I can't help but feel like they're just there making up the numbers a lot of the time.
You look at their list, their rider list, You've got Mads Pedersen, former world champ, admittedly won the world championships by basically being the toughest man on the day.
Correct, yeah.
No denying, an incredibly talented rider, but was the toughest rider on the day because that was a brutal day. You've got Vincenzo Nibali, who... I have a love-hate relationship with Nibali. Sometimes I love watching him race when he proper races, but there's questions about his legitimacy as a rider, you know, associations with Astana days, you know, I'm going to just say that quite honestly. And then you've got Balcomolima, a rider, as you say, has always been the bridesmaid. He's never been the bride.
He's always been the bride.
He loves swearing at SRAM. He loves swearing at SRAM. And then who else is there? Kelly Ellison. Be at Team Sky and just didn't really make it at Sky.
Jesper Stuyven.
Jesper Stuyven won, I can't remember what classics he won, but he won a classics and it was exceptional. But they're a team that, there seems to be a thing with that team. There's a lot of riders who on paper are very good. But I don't understand why they are good on paper. Like, why have they got this reputation? Is it because they always do quite well in races? Because surely, I mean, Nibali, you know, you look at Nibali and on paper, incredibly good, you know, super talented. He's one of very few riders that's won all Grand Tours. He's won the Giro, he's won the Vuelta, he's won the Tour de France. But what has he done in the last couple of seasons?
He's firmly over the prime of his career.
Correct.
He's kind of the grandfather now of the peloton, almost a little bit. If Valverde wasn't, he is, I suppose.
They don't feel like they have much young talent coming through in the team.
Yeah, so I'm trying to put myself in their shoes as a team. I'm team principal there. I'm looking around. Do I genuinely believe we've got a shot at challenging a GC at any tour? I'm not convinced. You know, Nibali can have his day in the high mountains, and he can have a day or two still. But he's not the rider he used to be. Are they limited to the kind of performance you see with the Mollema put in the other day? Is that the best they can hope for? Because they don't have a legitimate kind of proper sprinter that can go and compete with the fast guys. They feel like a team that when I look at them, they don't seem to have like a really well joined up strategy out to achieve something. It's still like they're there.
You know, I'm just looking at the full lineup at the moment, and it's a lot of, you know, obviously incredibly talented bike riders in the squad, but do you know what a lot of it is? There just doesn't seem to be any personalities there.
They are devoid of personality, I would suggest, yes.
And I mean that, like, I'm not saying that they're bland riders or anything, but I just mean, like, you know, you look at the likes of Pogacar in UAE, you look at UAE and you're like, Mark Hirschi, Pogacar.
Yeah.
You know, there's characters there. Ineos, and you're like, everyone obviously talks about how super strong and incredible Kwiatkowski is, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you look at all the, you look at Jumbo Visma, you're like, wow, but not.
Yeah.
You, and I look at the Trek Segafredo team, and I'm always like, Bauke Mollema has always been that kind of rider. I'm like, he's done all right.
Yeah. So then again, if you are Trek and or Segafredo, and you're the team here, and you're looking at going, oh, okay, you know, not a lot of confidence we're going to deliver on the big stage here. They've been in the tour and around the tour scene now for a good number of years in this format. You know, is there a point where they're going, oh, we're not getting this out of this what we want? You know, are they one of the teams that might end up changing over in the coming year or two because the results and the strategy haven't matched up the expectations, perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Trek Bikes, you know, the biggest manufacturer of bikes in the world, how much has their bike been on telly? Mollema yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stage 15.
Let's just say the women's Trek Segafredo team is a better team than the men's team, in my opinion.
I agree with that.
And, you know, you've got Lizzie Diagne in there. You've got Audrey Cordon-Rogo. Like,
yeah.
Lisa Longo-Borghini. Like, there's three of the
best
riders in the world at that team. The women's...
Gosh, Trek, yes.
Incredible. And... The only reason, I mean, the problem with the women's peloton is SD Works are so dominant.
Yeah.
But the Trek Segafredo women's team is probably a tiny bit behind in the dominance of SD Works, you know.
Yes, but they're competitive on a regular basis.
Exactly.
You don't see that out of the Trek Segafredo men's team.
You know, you're seeing Cordon-Rogo. Like breaking away, you're seeing Lizzie Diagne going for the attacks. You're seeing Elisa Longo-Borghini going for attacks. They're winning time trials. They're winning team time.
Yes,
trials. They are competitive as a team. They're always putting the bikes at the front of the race. So you're seeing them.
Mm.
It's not just the bikes. You know, this is a team which is sponsored by Trek. So it's the Bontrager range, the helmets, the wheels, the saddles, the bars.
The bars.
It's everything the brand that's being put into the main light from. The women's side of the peloton much more than the men's side.
There's a lot riding on it, a lot riding on that for them because, like I said, Trek that they the biggest manufacturer of bicycles there are, and all the accompanying parts that go with it, it feels like a long time since they've had a significant result in the men's peloton. Interesting. They're one of the ones that when I think about what does the tour look like next year or the year after, I wonder how that might change with those guys. But, you know, or is it as simple as for Trek? They're in it anyway because they're the biggest manufacturer of bicycles. It's not a huge part of their budget. They don't really care.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the men's team and you've got Giulio Ciccone, like, he's good. He's very good.
Yeah.
Incredibly, yeah. I think, really underrated. I had him in my Giro fantasy team and he did great for me.
Yeah.
Ciccone's probably their next hope as a GC rider, I'd say, in that team, you know. But is he a GC rider compared to the likes of Pogacar?
No,
he's not. Is he a stage winner? 100%. Can win stages. Can he be up there, like top 10? Yeah, he could be a top 10. But the thing is with that team is you think that was the team... That was, you know, Leopold Trek at one point. You know. Clearly, Bean doesn't like Trek.
Bean has some thoughts about Trek. They mainly involve the dog next door.
Yeah, you think of... I think of the history of that team when it was Leopold Trek and, you know, Cancellara and the team or the Schleck brothers in that team. It's a very different team back then. Very, very different team. You know, that was a GC aiming team.
That was a GC aiming team. You're quite right. I'm thinking the heights of which they've fallen from is kind of, where I'm looking, you know, what do they look like a year or two down the line? I'm not quite so sure. it'd be similar to see with Bora Hansgrohe. How do they move on from Sagan? What does the future look like for those guys? Or will there be a complete change there?
Well, I think with that team, you can see there is an intentional change. Was Pollitt winning the stage was fantastic. You know, incredible win for him. He's a rider that has always looked like a rider that could win stages at these Grand Tours, and just quite been there. And I think it's kind of become clear with that team when you look at it that they're going, you know, we need to change this team and freshen up because Sagan's going. Wrong young riders coming into the team. They've obviously changed their stance to go for a bit more of a GC thing. Wilco Kelderman now there. One of the other rumours that's come out is that Jai Hindley's going to sign for that team.
Oh, yeah, and he's great. He's a really good rider. I really rate him.
So you can see there's a stance that they're trying to change the angle of the team. I mean, we've just seen this with Azure 2 this season. It's a prime example. They got rid of Roman Bardet with the intention of focusing more on the classics, bringing in Golden Bloody Greg. And, you know.
Poor Golden Greg. He gets a lot of flack for winning the Olympics, doesn't he, Golden Greg?
Purely because he's milked it so much. And I know we've had a day at the Olympics, but he's milked it with the gold bike, the gold helmet, the gold shoes, the gold glasses, the gold rings on the jersey. Like, you look at
Anna. Yeah. And for me, it's audacious and obnoxious at the same time, but I put myself in his shoes. Would I be wearing a gold helmet still? Maybe, if I won the Olympics. I don't know.
As a two, as a team that's changed from trying to be a GC team to kind of going for a stage winning team, and then happened to stumble upon a potential GC winner. Well, I say GC podium rider, I should probably say, with Ben O'Connor. And you think how the fact that Ben O'Connor got a contract there in his own right was fantastic, because, you know, he was at MPT and not even having a team.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
It will be interesting. I always find starting to hear about these transfers fascinating, because it starts to see the stance that the teams are taking. And I think I mentioned previously, there's that rumour about Rowan Dennis going to Jumbo Visma as well. Like, that's a big move. That's a big... And what does this mean for Ineos as well? Like, They're not winning.
We can't say they're not winning, because I always leap to their defense. Perhaps I shouldn't, but you know, they've won the Giro back to back. They're the team, right? They're not winning the Tour de France right now, but they're the only team trying, as far as I can see, as a unit. So if it wasn't for Pogacar, they probably would be winning. I think it's probably inevitable that they try and get Pogacar onto their team, because I'm not sure there is a plan there to be. I don't think he can beat him the next couple of years. I think that would be a really interesting. It's a really interesting segue for Ineos as a team. You know, if they want to continue to be the force they have been in the sport, what do they do? Because I think your point is, right now it ain't working at the highest level.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's interesting. It really is interesting. I find transfer season fun. Oh, did you hear the other one about Soudal and not going to sponsor Lotto Soudal next season?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're going to Quickstep. Now, how about that as a Belgian, two Belgian team rivals? And one team goes to the other one.
Wowzers.
That's a big move.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's gonna confuse a lot of things.
What team's gonna be called next season? Is it gonna be Lotto Quickstep? Lotto De Koenig? De Koenig.
Something else Crikey, I don't know. Yeah. I do always find it fun the way that they come up with these names, and the order of which they choose. Rest day tomorrow. A couple of good looking stages after that. For my attention's on those high mountain stages, those high finish stages, and then the time trial, and then Paris.
Yes.
I don't want to put pressure on Cav to win that sprint stage in the middle. I want to see him win on the Champs-Élysées, you know?
But number 35 on the Champs-Élysées, led out by Alaphilippe and Mourcoff.
Yeah.
I will cry. I will cry.
Mic drop. You'll cry again. Yeah, round three. Okay.
Let's change it. I will cry again. I've been watching every single stage win that he's done.
Yeah.
And should we aim to have another chat in a couple of days?
Yeah, we need one midweek this week, don't we? We need one maybe after both high mountains or after one high mountain. Let's see how the diary looks in a few days.
Let's aim for one of the high mountains. Otherwise, after both or one. They're like middle of the week.
Yeah, because that's where, if anything is going to get mixed up in this race, it has to occur there, because we know the time trial is going to be weighted in favour of Pogacar because he's so good at it. You know, he's not going to come last in that. He doesn't have to win that day, but he, compared to his rivals, he's better. Mm. So you've got to think that somebody is going to try and roll the dice on those two high mountain stages. I just hope that somebody can come up with a plan and put it into action. I think it'll have to be Ineos. I don't see anybody else having the threat. Hopefully they can pull it out of the bag and ignite the race.
Okay, so I'm going to ask to just end it on. I'm going to say, as it stands right now, who do you think is going to be on the podium at the Tour?
I think Pogacar probably will win. Mm-hmm. I think the podium is probably how the podium is right now. Iran and Vingegaard.
I agree. I think Vingegaard might move up to second.
Yeah, without something really spectacular happening, I don't. Which I'd prefer. Much prefer something really spectacular and blow it all apart. But my gut says what we're looking at is the podium.
I agree with you. It maybe not second and third might not be in that order, but I think that is your top three. I would love to see something happen like Chris Froome at the Giro d'Italia, that stage, but I can't see it happening.
I can't see it happening at this point. It would take some audacious riding. I'd love to see it. I think Iran will still just keep doing what he's been doing. And likewise for Vingegaard. I've enjoyed Vingegaard. He's never quite looked like he's fully under pressure. He was able to pull a bit of distance on the Vontu stage. Even today, towards the end, he looked like he could still keep going. So, yeah. Yeah. And that's what we're going to end with.
Nice. I'll talk to
Lovely.
You. Nice one.
See you in a few days.
See you in a few days.